This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And joining us is Andrew Shepherd, PhD. Whoa.
I don't know
how to handle that.
Piled hip deep.
Yeah, that's definitely your case.
Yeah.
And you're from Sinclair. Let me read that again. Sinclair Community College. Unmanned Aerial Systems, the group, or whatever you want to call that?
Yeah, we have the National Unmanned Aerial Systems Training and Certification Center, and we're out of Dayton, Ohio.
That's a good place to fly.
Yeah, I think so. You got to have airplanes in Dayton.
That's right. And now we have other manned airplanes.
We do, yeah. So there's a lot happening in the civil and commercial space with drones, unmanned aircraft.
Well, are we talking the little guys, or are we talking the giant military-type things, or
so
anywhere in between?
At Sinclair, we're really focused on the below 55 pounds, but we have done a lot of applied research and development in addition to our training work, so application development and working with even federal partners like NASA and the Air Force.
Wow. The whole drone community environment, it's in such a state of flux right now.
Sure.
So that's got to be difficult for you guys. What is your end goal? Are you training pilots to become commercial UAS operators? Or
yeah, we really have kind of five main focus areas. One is, of course, training and certifications. We have certificate and degree programs in unmanned aerial systems all the way up through a Bachelor of Applied Science in unmanned aircraft systems. We also now have a Bachelor in Professional Aviation as well. So our students get to kind of cross-feed off of each other from our A&P school, our pilot program, our UAS program. They learn each other's technologies and jargon and terminology so that as they grow into professionals in the industry, they'll understand all that. We also do corporate training. So we're national and North American training partners of various manufacturers like SenseFly out of Switzerland and Altavian out of Florida. And then, of course, we do consulting and commercialization development with companies. We do applied research and development. So things like toxic algae bloom studies in Lake Erie, supporting NASA, flying hyperspectral sensors, looking 260 pictures at once, trying to look at the extent of the HABs. We've done search and rescue payload developments for a DHS requirement, beyond visual line of sight flight testing for the Air Force Research Lab. We also do data analytics and then integrated modeling and simulation. And in those cases, we've integrated assets as far away as Israel into integrated live and virtual training environments.
Sounds like they're awfully busy.
I was going to say, you guys are stacked up to the rafters.
Yeah, a little bit.
Must be a fun place to be right now.
It is, yeah, and a lot of advancement in the technology. What you can do today with a very affordable system would have been either super expensive or not even possible 4 or 5 years ago. So it's a great time to be part of it.
Yeah. Now, we've actually seen some drones. I don't know if they're under 55 pounds, though, but they're carrying gas-powered generators mm-hmm. to extend their range.
Sure.
Is that something you guys have worked with or considered? Or
yeah, so it's an interesting concept, kind of the hybrid.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ways that you can do that, and certainly you can get a huge duration or range boost out of that. Mostly we focused on electric so far. We have a few vertical takeoff and landing systems that can fly for over an hour with a 10-pound payload, and they're just purely electric. So that's quite good. We have a few fixed wings that can fly an hour and a half that are electric. So for most applications, we've not required a hybrid system, but we're certainly familiar with it. We have that kind of thing in the lab for the students to get exposure to.
Okay.
And work on. We even have a turbine UAS in the lab that was part of a DOD project several years ago, so they can tear that apart and see how all that works.
Interesting. Nobody's ever thought about this, but the human factor.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to get drones that can fly an hour and a half. You know, I'm sure they'll push 2 hours. You're going to get some tired pilots. Have
yep.
you guys considered this at all?
Yeah.
Of course, changing pilots is a lot easier.
Sure. So, yeah, human performance is a big part of all of this. So you have to consider that in your safety risk mitigation process. We actually have limits on how long your duty day can be. So if you're out there, just like traditional aviation, and you're in the field for 12 hours and you're flying intermittently all day, that last flight can be pretty draining, especially if it's been a hot day or a really cold day. So we at least for our purposes, we always send out multi-crew operations. You've got a main pilot, you've got a visual observer or a secondary pilot, and often they're trained to do the same things. You can swap back and forth if you need to. And so human performance is a big part of it.
Okay.
Your training programs, you're going Part 107 and beyond, I'm assuming?
Yeah, so Part 107 was a big movement forward in the industry. We actually started back when you only could do COAs. We're a public college, and so we had certificates of authorization from the FAA that allowed us to fly before there was anything like 107. And then if you remember the Section 333 exemptions that allowed initial commercial operation, so we had those. And then, of course, now we have 107. Now, there's still waivers that we operate under 107. We're needed for primarily airspace, but you know you can do those for nighttime operations and other things. And the flights we were doing in support of the Air Force Research Lab in April were beyond visual line of sight, and so that was in unsegregated airspace. It was a first of its kind type of flight operation in the country. So you had small single engines and jets and everybody else in the pattern at Springfield-Beckley Airport, and we were flying out there with them, and they didn't have to move, but we were 2,500 feet AGL. About 3 miles out of the pattern and operating out of the airport with them. So that was a collaboration with the Air Force and the state of Ohio, and we were happily the crew and the aircraft. So,
what kind of ranges are you talking about when you say beyond line of sight?
So for a small system with a directional antenna, you could get maybe about 6 miles. That's
pretty good.
That's a big game changer when you're looking at a small system.
Sure.
You know, if you're the number of launch and recoveries you would need for something like, say, a pipeline or
exactly.
a power line, you know, versus up and down every time you have to see
it. Right. You know, moving every 400 feet, that would take you forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's reasonable. Now, if you move in, like you mentioned, hybrids or fossil fuel powered kinds of systems, your durations can go up substantially in your ranges.
Right. Yeah. Right.
If you're going to be checking pipelines, is this going to be an semi-autonomous robot or robot drone?
Sure.
Or are you going to be hand-flying it the whole time?
So for the most part, I'd say 80% of what we do is autonomous, right? So it's if you think of a 10-point scale, it's somewhere around 5 or maybe up to 6, right? So you're programming it, you're monitoring it, you can change what's happening, but for the most part, it's kind of mowing the grass, right? It's getting the flight that you want. But you can always take over manually on these systems. It's not just making decisions for you and or not telling you what's happening. But for more complicated systems, there's higher levels of autonomy. So if it becomes a very complex project, you don't want to
always. But there's always the possibility of the pilot overriding it if he's doing a pipeline inspection.
Sure.
Sees something, he can turn around and get a better look.
Yeah,
at
absolutely.
It.
And you know, like as the example with that BV loss flight for the Air Force, we had to be able to move the aircraft quickly. So even though it was flying on an automated flight path, we had to be able to maneuver and maintain separation from the man traffic. And so same thing for an inspection, right? You have the ability to avoid obstacles, birds, other airplanes, that type of thing.
I was going to say
windmills, small things that might pop up.
Yeah. ADS-B on that thing by any chance?
We do a lot of flights with ADS-B. In that particular case, it was quite interesting. We had the telemetry coming off the aircraft ground control station, and on site, the Air Force has a system called Sky Vision that takes the STARS radar scope and it overlays our location with the regular radar. So that wasn't being sent back to ATC, but it was the situational awareness provision there on site. So you had a retired ATC controller there interpreting, running the radio, talking to the other pilots, and we had an Air Force contractor there with us that was next to our pilot interpreting for him. In that case, we were using telemetry. But ADS-B is a great way to get the telemetry ingest as well.
Do you foresee, or is there any research being done? My son and I were talking about this last night. ADS-B in on the drone. Mm-hmm. If you were flying with virtual goggles, you need a way to present information in the goggles that the pilot knows there's an aircraft in, you know. But since the goggles are a limited field of view, mm-hmm. you can't present aircraft that are in behind you.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, is anybody working on that kind of thing, integrating that to a pilot?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some interesting studies on kind of virtual world. We actually have a virtual reality goggle set that you can use for live virtual constructive training. And the idea is that when you're wearing it, you could actually put yourself out in the field at a remote site virtually and look up and see all the aircraft that are operating around you. So if you turn your head and you look up, back, right, left, you would see what was there, and it would be marked, and you would have information. So that's studies that are occurring. Primarily, we're still using, for situational awareness, 2D projections like a STARS radar scope or, you know, a flat map. It gives you a kind of a nice world view of what's happening. But, yeah, there's a lot of work going on in the research space.
Yeah, as this gets bigger and bigger, you're going to have to be able to do that.
I was going to say, because, you know, it's going to get more and more crowded. You're going to have more and more information. And I imagine with larger drone projects, you're going to have a setup similar to what you were using with the Air Force, just to make sure you're clear, especially in congested areas, say New York airspace, Chicago airspace, Philly or Frisco or Los Angeles.
Sure. Yeah, and being able to operate like we were in Springfield, Ohio, to integrate in real airspace with unsegregated traffic, and, you know, you can kind of step your way into it. So like you say, you don't want to start in New York, but you want to start in a realistic flight environment with some traffic, and that's what the FAA wanted them to do. So when they issued the waiver to the Air Force, they didn't want to move the manned traffic. They wanted it to be integrated, and it's a good test site. So,
did the manned traffic know you guys were operating?
Yeah, we did. There was a NOTAM, and we also would broadcast before the launch. We do periodic radio calls and just let everybody know where we were, and everybody just was aware of it, and they were fine. So
that was the next question: how'd they react?
Yep, it was fine. Nobody freaked out.
That's good.
So, good. Yeah. Where are you here on the field?
So Sinclair, we're a part of the National Park Service booth in Hangar D, and so if you come over and check it out, we can show you a little bit more about what we're doing. We're also I'm giving a talk this morning and Saturday at 9:45 about applications and technologies of drones, and then we have one more flying demo in the drone cage today at 2:00. So.
Okay, I want to thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Andrew Shepherd. I'm Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.